Chapter 9. Lost and Found. About 10 minutes later, the bell rang for tea, and Virginia, as you know, did not come down. Mrs. Otis sent up one of the servants to call her. After a little time, he returned and said that he could not find Miss Virginia anywhere. As she was in the habit of going out to the garden every evening to get flowers for the dinner table, Mrs. Otis was not at all frightened. But when 6 o'clock struck and Virginia did not appear, she became really worried. She sent the boys out to look for her, while she herself and Mr. Otis searched every room in the house. At 6:30, the boys came back and said that they could find no trace of their sister anywhere. They were all now in the greatest state of excitement. They did not know what to do. Then Mr. Otis suddenly remembered that, some few days before, he had given a band of gypsies permission to camp in the park. At once he set off for Blackfell Hollow, where he knew they were. His eldest son and two of the farm servants went with him. The young Duke of Cheshire begged to go. He was so worried about Virginia. But Mr. Otis would not allow him, as he was afraid there might be a fight. On arriving at the spot, however, he found that the gypsies had left. It was evident that their leaving had been rather sudden. In fact, the fire was still burning, and some plates were lying on the grass. Having sent off Washington and the two men to search around, he ran home. Once home, he sent telegrams to all the police officers in the county. He told them to look out for a young girl who had been kidnapped by gypsies. He then ordered his horse to be brought around. And after insisting that his wife and the three boys sit down to dinner, he and a servant rode off down the road. They had hardly gone a couple of miles when they heard somebody behind them. When Mr. Otis looked, he saw the young Duke coming up on his pony. The Duke's face was very red, and he had no hat on. "I'm awfully sorry, Mr. Otis," cried the boy, "but I can't eat any dinner as long as Virginia is lost. Please don't be angry with me. If you had allowed us to be engaged last year, there would never have been all this trouble. You won't send me back, will you? I can't go. I won't go." The minister could not help smiling at the handsome young boy, and he was a good deal touched at his devotion to Virginia. So, leaning down from his horse, he patted him kindly on the shoulders. Then he said, "Well, Cecil, if you won't go back, I suppose you must come with me, but I must get you a hat in town."
"Oh, forget about my hat. I want Virginia," cried the young Duke.
Then they hurried on to the railway station. There, Mr. Otis asked if anyone who looked like Virginia had been seen on the platform, but there was no news of her. The station master wired up and down the line. He assured Mr. Otis that a strict watch would be kept for her. And, after having bought a hat for the young Duke, Mr. Otis rode off to Bexley, a village about 4 miles away. He had been told that it was a popular place for gypsies to be. This was because there was a large common next to it. Here they woke up the rural policeman, but could get no information from him. And after riding all over the common, they turned around to head for home. They got there about 11 o'clock, dead tired and almost heartbroken. They found Washington and the twins waiting for them at the gate with lanterns, as the street was very dark. Not the slightest trace of Virginia had been discovered. The gypsies had been caught on Brockley Meadows, but she was not with them. Plus, they had explained their sudden leaving by saying that they had mistaken the date of Chorton Fair. They had gone off in a hurry for fear they should be late. Indeed, they had been quite upset at hearing of Virginia's disappearance. They were very grateful to Mr. Otis for having allowed them to camp in his park, and 4 of them stayed behind to help in the search. The fish pond had been dragged and the whole house thoroughly gone over, but without any result. It was evident that, for that night at any rate, Virginia was lost to them, and it was in a state of the deepest depression that Mr. Otis and the boys walked up to the house. The servant followed behind with the 2 horses and the pony. In the hall, they found a group of frightened servants.
Lying on a sofa in the library was poor Mrs. Otis, almost out of her mind with terror and anxiety. The old housekeeper was wiping Mrs. Otis's forehead with a cool cloth. Mr. Otis at once insisted on everyone having something to eat and ordered up supper for the whole party. It was a sad and silent meal, as hardly anyone spoke. Even the twins were awestruck and quiet. They were very fond of their sister. When they had finished, Mr. Otis ordered them all to bed. The little Duke tried to argue, but nothing more could be done that night. Mr. Otis would send a telegraph in the morning to Scotland Yard for some detectives to be sent down immediately. Just as they were leaving the dining room, midnight began to boom from the clock. When the last stroke sounded, they heard a crash and a sudden loud cry. Loud thunder shook the house. Then strange music floated through the air. And at the top of the staircase, a secret door opened with a loud noise, and out stepped Virginia. She looked very pale and white, and she held a little wooden box in her hands. In a moment, they had all rushed up to her. Mrs. Otis grabbed her and hugged her. The Duke covered her with kisses, and the twins did a wild war dance around the group. "Good heavens, child, where have you been?" said Mr. Otis rather angrily. Mr. Otis thought that she had been playing some mean trick on them. "Cecil and I have been riding all over the country looking for you, and your mother has been frightened to death. You must never play these practical jokes again."
"Except on the ghost! Except on the ghost!" shouted the twins.
"My own darling, thank God you are found. You must never leave my side again," whispered Mrs. Otis. Then she kissed the shaking girl and smoothed her golden hair.
"Papa," said Virginia quietly, "I have been with the ghost. He is dead, and you must come and see him. He had been very bad, but he was really sorry for all that he had done, and he gave me this box of beautiful jewels before he died."
The whole family gazed at her in silent amazement, but she was quite serious. And, turning around, she led them through the opening in the wall down a narrow secret hall. Washington followed with a candle, which he had picked up from the table. Finally, they came to a large door with rusty nails. When Virginia touched it, it swung open easily. They found themselves in a little room with a high ceiling and one tiny window. Attached to the wall was a huge iron ring, and chained to it was a skeleton. It was stretched out at full length on the stone floor, and though dead, it seemed to be trying to reach an old-fashioned plate and cup that were placed just out of its reach. The jug had once been filled with water. It was covered inside with green mold. There was nothing on the plate but a pile of dust. Virginia sat down beside the skeleton and folded her little hands together. Then she began to pray silently. The rest of the party looked on in wonder at the terrible skeleton, whose secret was now known by all of them.
"Hello!"
suddenly exclaimed one of the twins. He had been looking out of the window to try and discover in what part of the house the room was situated.
"Hello! The old withered almond tree is flowered. I can see the flowers quite plainly in the moonlight."
"God has forgiven him," said Virginia as she rose to her feet, and a beautiful light seemed to shine on her face.
"What an angel you are!" cried the young Duke.
Then he put his arms around her neck and kissed her.